Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight, where we catch up with one of our friends from back in the days at the beginning of YouTube. Halsey is with us, and I'm excited. How are you doing, Halsey?
I am doing great. How about you, man?
I'm doing great. So what have you been doing on the internet? We lost touch to a certain extent.
So I still stream once or twice a week, but I haven't really had time. I'm really into crypto at this point. We've launched a couple crypto projects ourselves, and we do some audits on some others. I have another three projects coming out in the next couple months, so keeps me real busy.
Yeah, I've seen you were working on a protocol that will help people acquire funds to build a house.
Yep, funds to move, get the hell out of the cities and get into the country. We're looking to service like the mortgage industry, which isn't really serviceable because nobody wants to buy houses in the middle of nowhere. And we do it debt free. So our project lets people basically pay about 50% for a house and do so without any debt.
That's wonderful. Very needed in the current market. And the market is crazy. You have to pay high price now, even if you go in the countryside.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I bought my house for less than 5 years ago. I think I paid $250,000 for it. And it's worth triple that right now. Wow. For no reason. Like nothing's happened to justify it. It just is.
Yeah, that's how it is. I had an old land that I wasn't able to build on because I moved on to other projects and bought a full house. The land has tripled value also.
Well, I heard in Canada it's really nuts. Yeah. I heard in Canada it's really nuts. Like, absolutely. I mean, they say there's no houses and the ones that are there are so expensive that people can't afford to buy them.
Absolutely. So since we are catching up, and I have no idea of your views on the Ukraine conflict, and so I'm very interested in this interaction to discover what you think about it, because I've seen some of your recent shows with Tom Luongo, and you were focusing on the whole American aspect that things are going to get bad, that shortages are coming, that the economy is getting wrecked. That's one thing, but the conflict in and of itself, from the Russian perspective and the Ukrainian perspective, where do you stand on it?
I mean, I have to preface what I say by saying I really don't give a shit. Like, I don't care at all. If they want to fight for the next 10 years and kill each other, like, I really could care less. But that being said, I would firmly say I'm on Team Vlad on this one. I don't see any reason why we should be supporting the absolute center of, like, global homo and corruption in this world and somehow claim it's in defense of democracy. Like, I even care about democracy in the first place.
Well, that is very interesting. Were you that anti-war? Well, that were you siding opposite to the American regime in previous wars, like those of the Middle East?
I've always been against the Iraq war. I was always against getting involved in Syria. Okay. I think the idea of going to war with Iran is crazy. You know, I think if there's an American interest, and I don't say that from like your typical like Israeli Hasbro opposition where we can define American interest as being anything. I mean, American interest, meaning they're going to bomb us, therefore we have to bomb them in response. I have no problem with using military might. But other than that, I think that our escapades around the world have been so reckless and so devastating. And all it seems to do is spread feminism. That seems to be the only goal of America's kind of regime around the world.
The LGBT flag in Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. Because that serves a purpose. You know, it just serves a purpose of being able to say, haha, we got you too. You know, and we see firsthand how bad what it's done to us. It's literally turned society and crumbled it. So the fact that we're now trying to export it just speaks volumes about how bad our foreign policy has always been.
Absolutely. Well, I stand pretty much where you are. I am on Team Vlad simply because the question here, which is highlighted even more than those wars in the Middle East, because those wars in the Middle East were not as clear as this, but here this is a clash of two civilizations. It is the expansion of the West, or it is the stabilization or expansion of the East. And given that our societies have crumbled so much, as they did, I will root for any enemy of it so that we can be weakened. And people are asking me, Jeff, will this war really weaken the US? Well, if you start hitting on commerce, if you start hitting on trade, if Ukraine doesn't export its food to Europe, it gives something else to think to our leaders than oppressing us. So they will get busy thinking about other problems for a moment. And that's good for us.
Well, you also have to take it back to the 70s with modern monetary theory. Modern monetary theory is we could just print money forever and don't worry about it because we can either use inflation or, I don't know, they don't really give a clear answer as to why we could just keep printing money that we don't have forever. And in doing so, we've now exported nothing. We create nothing. Our technology is bought from other societies. We don't really export oil. Our food industry is garbage. The only thing we really export is Hollywood, global homo, feminism, and trash. And I'm sorry, there's a siren outside.
No problem.
But in the end of the day, what Vladimir Putin is doing and I hate to be like saying I'm even on the side of China a little bit on this one because I absolutely despise the Chinese. But what they're doing is monetizing commodities in a way that we haven't seen since the gold standard. And in doing so, they'll actually be forcing America to start living within its means. So all this idea of like promoting trannies in sports and, you know, feminism and all this trash, it's not going to be doable for the time being because you will have food riots. You'll have people not able to pay their homes and banks, foreclosing on millions of people. And when that comes, we are in deep, deep shit. But we might get something out of it because if the world has now decided that gold and oil and food are the commodities that we want to trade in as opposed to fake money, it's all the much better for us and it's all the much better for everybody around the planet as far as I'm concerned.
And we've been put in the weakest position possible by developing this whole service economy of basically mm-hmm. fiction within America. While these countries were getting busy building dependencies, lines of dependencies toward the manufacturing of China, toward the food of Ukraine, toward the oil of Russia. And now they're playing we can see their full game now. They have made us dependent and we have totally collaborated to it and our elites have been enriching themselves at doing it also. But now they will be holding us by the balls and determining the standard of life in America.
Well, if you want to look at the insanity of American policy over the last, I would say, 40 years, I forgot the name of the rule, but there's an economist named Anthony Davies. He's fantastic, and he was going over it. There's a rule that if you want to sell a product that's farmed or bought in America to another port in America, it has to be transferred on an American ship. Now, that's only accepted by if it's at some point transported by a Canadian railway, because obviously Alaska has railways that connect with the states. So the fishing industry in Alaska, when they want to sell seafood to the east coast of America, they put it on a ship, a Chinese ship, go through the Panama Canal, bring it all the way up to British Columbia, unload the ship, put it on a Canadian train, go 200 feet, back up 200 feet, reload the ship, and then deliver it onto the East Coast of America. And that's really? To stay in compliance with the law. That's how insane we've gotten in this country in terms of what we want to do to force people to kind of live up to these weird moralistic standards that don't exist anywhere else. And it's the chickens are coming home to roost, and you're seeing it everywhere. Like, I mean, I don't know, when you go to the grocery store, do you notice how little stuff there is? Forget the inflation. Everything's triple the price that it ever was. But there's shortages. You go and there's just things they don't have. And you ask when they're getting them in and they don't know. You know, I went to one of my local groceries and they had no Coca-Cola. And I said to the guy, like, how could you not have Coca-Cola? He said, it used to be I ordered and within 24 hours they delivered. There was never any other thing. He says, they're a week late right now. And they told me they have no idea when they're going to be able to get it.
Absolutely. I've seen it firsthand. As a reminder to our crowd, you can send super chats using my favorite platform for super chats, Odyssey, by clicking the dollar button below the regular chat. You can also join us on Entropy. The link to Entropy is right below the video. As far as the war goes,
Entropy, did they lose their payment processor?
No, I don't know that. They've been constantly working for me every day.
Oh, okay, because TFM uses Entropy, and he told me that last week that they couldn't give him his money, they couldn't send him his money anymore, unless I think they sent him like a physical check or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, they might have difficulties in specific countries to output the money, but the input of the money doesn't seem to be a problem. So perhaps sometimes they take time to move the money because they're paying creators across the world. I'm a Canadian. They pay me in Canadian dollar, but elsewhere it's going to be different, and that might be what they had a problem with.
It's a shame. I've been a big supporter of theirs from the beginning. They're one of the actual true free speech platforms out there. It's great.
Yes, and they've been doing a wonderful job, and they've allowed a lot of people to transition away from the oppression of YouTube. You're still on YouTube. How has it been going for you? I've been banned from Twitter, personally. They've pulled a bizarre excuse saying I was spamming, when in fact all I'm posting are my shows. How have you been doing on the mainstream platforms?
So I'm on my 17th Twitter account, and I only have it to communicate with a few people that I don't know how to get in touch with them outside of Twitter. I'm still on YouTube, but usually I can't stream to it because I get strikes, and then I can't stream until it wears off. And then like within a week or two, I get another strike. But everything I do get, I upload, and then I usually delete it right away and just put it on BitChute.
Okay.
But it's a joke. It really is a joke. The one they keep hitting me for lately is medical misinformation. And I don't even know what I'm saying, but apparently I'm misinforming people on medicine.
And this is one moral pillar that we have lost against enemies. We can't go out there and say, oh, you know, Russia is evil because they imprison dissidents and they silence free speech, because we're no more the holders of the pillars of free speech that we used to be.
If anything, we're worse, because we do it behind a cloak of morality. We claim that what we're doing is right for the world, and that we should be followed by example, and that we're actually the good guys. But when we imprison people and kill dissidents and do things like that, we just always say, oops, it wasn't my fault, you know, or oops, we did it for the benefit of everybody. Whereas when we see China do it, or we see Russia do it, all of a sudden it's, oh my God, these are the most evil people. But I'll tell you what, if we became friends with Russia again tomorrow, we wouldn't care. Just like we didn't care with Saudi Arabia, then we did, then we didn't, now we kind of do again. It just depends on what selective morality we tend to take at the time.
Becoming friends with Russia again, that is an interesting suggestion. Is it what Vladimir Putin wants? He seems like the kid who has been abandoned by all the other countries, and he seems to be following a kind of noble goal in his mind in this war. And yet all of the friends are bullying him, America, the West of Europe. They don't, even if he was to do the most humane war possible, they would still call it civilian attacks, and they would call it chemical attacks, and they would say he commits war crimes.
Of course they would, because, and I've noticed this from the beginning, whenever Russia says something, everyone goes, oh my God, it's complete disinformation, it's bullshit, whatever it may be, then it turns out to be true. And whenever Ukraine seems to come up with something, oh my God, he did this, he did that, turns out it's not really the whole story. You know, if anything, it's not true at all. And I know Putin has this policy of denazification, which I think he said that just basically because he thought that because the West is so obsessed with Nazis, that it would almost give him common cause with some people. But when you look at it, like, there are actual Nazis that are fighting on the side of Ukraine. And, oh, Zelensky is Jewish is the new, oh, I have friends that are black. You know, it's that's the same thing. I can't be racist. I have friends that are black. Oh, there can't be Nazis in Ukraine because Zelensky is Jewish. It's such a load of shit that it's hard to watch. And so truthfully, I try not to, but you can't avoid seeing it. But you know what's funny? You asked me to do the show, and I had just mentioned you the other day, because when we first talked, right before we talked to Fuentes, we had this talk about vaccines. And you said something like, wait until the day they can give you a vaccine that alters your DNA. And I've been saying that to like anyone who will listen. I was like, you know, someone said that to me years ago before this even came out. And I was like, it haunts me almost, seeing like all these, like these good people like dropping dead of heart attacks, you know, and I saw, like they said something like 200 soccer players have like died on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very haunting moment, because I remember it like clear as day when you said that. Like, we were just talking about whether they should be able to enforce the vaccine. This is long before mRNA. This must have been, what, three or four years ago at this point.
Yes, I've seen them coming because I have the right scientific theory, and I understand the world. I understand the world as a war between RNA and DNA, and the war is not even over, and we're moving to the next stage. And I've also seen their behavior even before COVID. I was very alarmed at the behavior of the Americans and the Quebecois people during the H1N1 crisis. You saw the beginning rise there of the mob phenomena, the social pressure on medical decisions, and suddenly it's like the sanctified medical decision that should be in the individual's choice with his doctor and information. All of it was scraped even before the COVID crisis. And the COVID crisis was an opportunity to do it in the open because you have these Bill Gates, they really lay out their plans in the public space. But back in the H1N1, it was just the beginning of this moral kind of, oh, if you don't do it, you're not on our side. If you don't get the vaccine, you are kidding grandma, that kind of stuff. And it digs very deeply in the leftist contradictions. Because the leftists are motivated by stopping harm. And by stopping harm so much, you may be causing more harm in the long run. And I think it's what they've been doing.
I've gotten over this whole the leftist motivation is anything at this point. They don't seem to know what they're talking about anymore. Like I actually had an argument with this woman in my town. This was right in the back about the middle of COVID, right? And I said, you know, how come there's no more flu cases? They said that there was like literally flu was down 99 point something percent. And she says, well, what do you expect? Everybody's wearing masks and socially distancing. I said, then how come COVID's spreading? She said, because not enough people are wearing masks and social distancing. Like, and she said it with a straight face. She said this right to my face. Like, and I just looked at her. I was like, I don't even know what to say. And I just walked away. But they don't know what they're talking about anymore because it's like they kind of tune in for the morning to Twitter or Facebook or wherever they get their info from. They get the day's talking points and they just go out and spout them. They don't even care that they don't know what they're saying. And if you trip them up and try to like throw a monkey wrench in what they're saying, they'll just go back to repeating themselves over and over and over again until you just get tired of saying.
Oh, yeah. And one of the most scary statistics I've seen was that the triple vaccinated are 88% likely to be pro-Ukraine. And if you go into the non-vaccinated, it's something like 20%. It's like 80-20. So basically, what you describe, you know, getting your talking points from Twitter in the morning, it's happening. We have a bunch of sheep around us and they're just following orders. I've known that society was like this from the beginning, which is why I'm so black-pilled. And I don't have any project to convince people away from this, but it's scary because these sheeps are getting aggressive. They're coordinating, they're excluding people through cancel culture, and they will soon send us to the gulags.
I agree and I disagree. I think that and you've actually stumbled on it yourself with the decentralized nature of Odyssey, right? It's the same thing with the decentralized nature of cryptocurrencies. You can detach from society to the point where it's not like you're just completely isolating, but at the same time, you're able to form a life outside of the current, you know, administration rules. Like you could just live, you pay your taxes, you do what you got to do, but you don't have to get involved and you don't have to be cancelable. You know, if they can't take your job and they can't, you know, socially damage you because nobody cares, it's a threat to them, but it's one they don't know how to counteract, so they just ignore you. You know, like that's why they wouldn't even care if Alex Jones was on Odyssey. Like they care if he goes on YouTube as a guest because of all the time and capital and energy they put into getting him actually deplatformed. But decentralized nature of society is coming and you're seeing it more and more. So the best you can do is just isolate as far as you can from it. Like, I mean, that's what I've been doing for a year now. I've been buying plots of land and building on them. And as far as I'm concerned, when I'm ready to leave New Jersey, pretty much when my kids are out of school, if I even have that long, like I'm going to have like five or six different places that I can choose from, and I'm just going to be done. I just, it's the only way we can do it.
It's possible to escape the system, but the system is enlarging. So the places for escape are getting rarer and rarer. And it's a thing of privilege to be able to escape the system. Yep. If someone is dependent, if someone has a rent and it's the only way they can survive, they have a little job, they can't get an opportunity anywhere to get another job. It's all they have, and it's not easy to buy land and build on it.
It's also, and I think you touched on it earlier, we've been pushed out of the idea of having a regular job anymore. Like we kind of became Uber drivers and Amazon delivery people and, you know, DoorDash and all of this. And people don't have regular jobs anymore. They're dependent on a day's work in order to get by. So it's not even that you can cancel someone. It's you make it impossible for them to have any type of upward mobility at all. There's nothing you can invest in either. Your savings, it's worthless. Inflation's at like 8% a month or something like that. You know, every day you put it in the bank, you're getting poorer and poorer and poorer. You invest in the stock market, there's no real money to be made there anymore. And that's where the inflation's really going to hit soon. When all that money they pumped into the financial system starts trickling back into the economy, when they start selling all the bonds and stocks that they've been buying for the last 10 years, you're going to see prices. We're going to be Great Depression plus. And it's something that I'm not even like a conspiracy theory by saying it, like even the Fed is saying. You know, absolutely. I mean, Jerome Powell has been like begging to please be able to do something because he knows that they're out of bullets. They have nothing more they can do to stabilize the financial system. The money's just not there.
Absolutely. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. He says, Chancellor Karl Nehammer visited Putin and apparently talked tough. Putin refused to speak German and demanded a translator so that the entire event was recorded. Is Austria really in any kind of position to take an aggressive stance? Karl Nehammer is a literally who figure in world politics.
Austria itself is not in a position to do absolutely anything because Austria is dependent on Germany. Germany runs the EU. The euro is controlled by Germany's wealth. So none of them, because none of them can print money. If they run into a problem and they can't afford whatever it is they need to afford, they can't just go print it and then hope to like buy debt later or pay off the debt later. They don't have the ability. They basically have to turn to Germany. And Germany is about to find out what a cold winter is all about. By next year, they're going to be freezing to death.
So you think this is what's going to happen? Vladimir Putin ultimately will not deliver gas. And there will be some kind of conflict that will lead to the gas not being exported?
What I'm waiting for next is right now, Vladimir Putin's technically in default on his debt. It's not because he can't pay it. It's because they won't let him pay it in euros. I mean, in rubles. And he has plenty of dollars. He has billions in dollars. He has billions in euros too. But they won't let him pay his debt in it. So technically, he's in default. I don't think he cares because he's basically pegging the ruble to gold. So I don't think he actually cares about being in default or about borrowing money from any of these countries anymore. But what I think he's going to work out with Germany, and this will be an ultimate like get on your knees, bitch moment, is he'll say, you retire my debt for me, meaning Germany, you use your euros to pay off my debt. And I want money in advance and I won't let you freeze to death. You know, I don't think he'll actually need to turn off the gas, but I think that will be basically what it comes down to.
A little bit like the child who has accumulated on the credit card and says to his parent, can you pay my credit card?
Yep, basically.
Wow. Basically. You think, well, I mean, people will see this and they will say Germany is a collaborator to escape sanctions. I don't think it can work.
I think it'll have to work. I don't think they'll have a choice. Like, I think they're talking tough now and they're, oh, we're not going to allow any Russian gas or whatever, but they have no other options. And Biden has completely fucked them over. I mean, I don't know how they are going by with this. There was one lifeline, literally one. There was a natural gas pipeline that was being built from Israel to Cyprus to Greece, right? And it was going to directly supply liquid natural gas to Europe. Biden canceled it. Because the American companies are the only ones that can actually build it. And he said that he won't do it unless it goes through Turkey. And Turkey says they won't do it unless Israel complies with a whole bunch of like policy about peace and all that, which they're never going to do. So basically, the pipeline is effectively dead. Whereas next year, it would have already been pumping liquid gas into Europe. Now it's done. The only way they can bring it is by ship. And they don't even have enough ships to transport it. to get it there. And Germany doesn't have the nodes to get it. They can't even accept that much from shipping.
Which is in line with an interpretation that was presented by Bill Gates on this show before the war began, that the upcoming war was not a war against Russia. It's a war by the US against Germany. But why would the US do that to Germany? What's the problem with Europe for the US?
I can't imagine. If Trump were still president, I could imagine that that could be true. Just out of sheer resentment of the idea that Germany's become an economic powerhouse while basically skating on a lot of US dollars. Like, Germany hasn't had to pay for its military since World War II. We have more soldiers stationed there than we did ever in Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, our military bases are a huge part of their economy. So Trump was righteously angry at Germany for this and just basically told them to start ponying up some money. But Biden and Germany seem to be on the same page on everything. In fact, it was Germany urging Biden to get tougher on Russia. So I don't know how this, I would love to hear his reasoning as to why America would want to be at war with Germany or try to hurt Germany.
Yeah, it's clear that from the beginning of this war, it was foreseeable that America was making big moral displays, but not at its own cost, but at the cost of Europe. So mm-hmm. I'm mind blown about why that would be, but it seems to be the case.
I mean, there's some people I've heard say this. Now, I don't know if I completely buy it, but there's been a pretty nice nationalist rise in Europe, in every country, you know, whether it be Italy, whether it be France. They're all seeing a more right-wing nationalist bend to their politics. Not saying they're going to go, you know, like full Trump anytime soon, or not even Trump, he wasn't even that right-wing, but they're not going off the deep end. But at the same time, Biden is doing the exact opposite. Like, I mean, every policy that failed in Europe, mass migration, you know, huge monetary spending, massive debt, environmentalism, like these are all things that Biden is tripling down on while Europe is trying to at least slow down. You know, I mean, maybe. I just can't see that as a reason why Biden would want, or I mean, obviously Biden doesn't know what he's doing. So whoever the people who are behind Biden would want to pick a fight with Europe at this point, I just can't imagine why they would want to.
And how bizarre it is, this whole entanglement of the family of Biden with both China and Ukraine. And the way they kind of dropped Ukraine under the bus, other than delivering some weapons, it looks like they want the full human cost of this war to be undertook by the Ukrainian people. Do you feel that America has been abandoning Ukraine and that ultimately they didn't care about Ukraine winning that much?
So this is where I'm going to get a little conspiratorial on you a little bit. The only thing I have to say about Ukraine is they know where the bodies are buried. Mitt Romney's kid, Nancy Pelosi's kid, Secretary Blinken's kid, Biden's kid, they've all worked for Burisma, you know, in oil jobs that they had no experience with and made millions of dollars on. Zelensky was their puppet from the beginning. So the idea that he knows where the bodies are buried means they don't want him deposed. Because if the Russians get their hands on him, he'll spill. He'll tell everything he possibly knows. But they also don't want him to get the upper hand. So all this bullshit about us sending them weapons, we're not really sending them weapons. We're allowing all the Eastern Bloc countries in Europe to unload all their old Russian crap and give it to the Ukraine. And then we're sending the good stuff to them so they can rearm their militaries. That's the way it's going. We're not giving them anything of consequence. That's why it's so easy when you see like tanks blown up in the street and they go, oh, look, they're all Russian tanks. Russia's getting their asses kicked. No, they're not. They're just old Russian tanks because Poland gave them all to the Ukraine and now they're all getting slaughtered by newer Russian tanks.
Absolutely. Now, on the strategies on the ground, we have seen a withdrawal from Kiev, an expansion of the forces in the east and south. We have seen a relatively quick progression of the forces initially, and then a war of attrition, a siege of Mariupol, a takeover of Kherson, bombardment of Kharkiv has been going on since almost the beginning. What do you see happening there? There's lots of pro-Ukraine propaganda that is trying to present this war as a failure for Vladimir Putin. Is that just words, just playing on the moral, or do you think there is something wrong with the war effort?
So I have to say this perfectly because I don't want to get soundbited as to trying to not say what I mean. Okay. In World War II, when Neville Chamberlain went and met with Hitler, the idea was that Hitler wanted the Sudetenland, right? And his argument was that it was part of Germany until the end of World War I. It was filled with ethnic Germans, and they were being oppressed by the Slovakians. That was all true. There was no bullshit to that at all. And it was 100% like agreeable to say, well, just give it back to them. There's no reason to go to war over this tiny little sliver of land where there is no reason for Czechoslovakia to hold it in the first place. Now, I'm not saying that Hitler was right. I'm saying because he then went and invaded other countries, sensing the weakness of the West at that point. But Putin's in the same position. Mariupol, the Donbass, Crimea, these are all ethnically Russian places. And the Azov Battalion and all of these, they're actually killing people. It's illegal to speak Russian in some of those areas, and they will kill your ass if you do. So he has a legitimate claim. Now, why did he go after Kiev in the first place? Number one, to keep Zelensky in basically a bunker. And number two, because once you go too far, when you pull back, it looks like you're actually, you know, being moderate and kind of going for what you actually wanted. I think that's what he's doing. He's trying to consolidate his holds in the ethnic Russian areas, and he's going to negotiate for those areas once it's pretty obvious he's not going to give them up in the first place.
Do you think that he's going to go for preserving a land bridge to Crimea, or do you think he's really still just interested in DPR, LPR, and Crimea, as his request of peace agreement indicated at the beginning of the war? Personally, I think he's sacrificed so much effort that it would be sad at this point if only these three areas were taken over.
He's not stupid. He's not a stupid man by far. Without a land bridge to Crimea, he has no way to effectively defend it, especially because whenever this conflict does end, America and Europe are going to be more than happy to give Ukraine any weapons they want to buy for actual currency or for wheat or for whatever it is they want to trade. And that will happen. They won't let them join NATO, or they might let them join the EU, but I doubt it. You know, but they will be more than happy to send them weapons. So if there's not a land connection to Crimea, then he's basically effectively lost it, because they'll pull terrorist attacks in between the two masses for the end of time until Putin pulls out anyway. And then they will literally kill every ethnic Russian in that area.
It's what they've been doing to DPR, LPR, with the kind of war of attrition, harassment, the slow genocide that people are saying has been debunked, but it's not been debunked. No. I've read this today on mainstream media, the repeated claims that have repeatedly been demonstrated false of genocide in the DPR. Wait a minute, they were talking about it on TV shows. They were openly doing it.
Yeah, and you know what? 90% of the time when you hear the talk of genocide in any Western paper, it's bullshit. Like, genocides happen when hundreds of thousands of people get slaughtered and are completely defenseless. A couple people getting killed in an armed conflict are absolutely not a genocide. You could say it's a war crime if you want. I mean, I think that's a little silly to say that there's certain things in war you can do and certain things you can't. But I mean, that it's just silly because the idea of war is to win it. And that's what's best for actually everybody. It doesn't matter how many people you kill. It matters that you end it as fast as possible. And this idea there's a genocide, there will be a genocide if Ukraine retakes any of these areas. If they're able to retake like the Donbass or Crimea or anything, there will be a genocide because they will kill every ethnic Russian in those areas.
We've already seen it happen from within the areas controlled by Ukraine, this whole suspicion of saboteurs, and essentially they're going after Russian-speaking and Russian-sympathetic people. They have captured the guy who has appeared in the Oliver Stone documentary revealing Ukraine today. They've announced that he was captured, so they probably want to use him as leverage. They're really hateful of Russians. They have a problem with Russians. I've actually, you know, in all my years talking to so-called hateful people as an interviewer, I've never seen actual hate as much as I see in this conflict. They hate them with their gut, the Russians.
It's this weird conflict that we're never going to understand in the first place, I don't think, because none of us really get why the Ukraine and Russians hate each other so much. because they realistically shouldn't. Like, I mean, they're both basically Slavic people. They both speak the same languages. They both even have the same interests most of the time. I mean, it just seems to be more of like a my dick's bigger than yours type hatred. But it is very, very strange that they let this kind of stuff go on still these days. But I do think in the end there will be a certain level of like genocide in Ukraine if they let Ukraine retake these areas. But I don't think they will. I think everybody knows the lines, and I think people are telling Putin where the lines are. That's why he's now retreating back to those lines completely unprovoked. Like, I think they've told him, like, these areas were going to be fine in a final peace agreement, that you keep these and Ukraine will keep this, and someone please, for love of God, keep putting the weed on the boats. But, you know, like, I think that that's what you're going to see. And then you won't see a genocide. You'll probably see a lot of Ukrainians kicked out of those areas, as well they should be.
What is there to say about Zelensky? In my view, he's caused so much human suffering. Because he's had a peace offer at the beginning of this war, which was Russia wants DPR, LPR to be sovereign nations, and Crimea to be recognized as part of Russia. He didn't take that. And so as far as I'm concerned, first, he's not going to end up with better than this. There's just no way the Ukrainian army will reconquer all of these territories. I mean, they weren't even under the control of Ukraine before the war, let alone after the war. I think he's caused, by refusing this very reasonable deal, he's caused a lot of human suffering and a lot of civilian death.
I think that what Zelensky is afraid of is at the end of the day that they're going to blame him for all of this. And so he's afraid for his future, obviously. He doesn't want to have to run to a foreign country. He doesn't want to have to run to America and be a government in absentia. And I don't think they'd let him in anyway. But even if they did, I don't think that's what he wants. I think he wants to stay president of Ukraine and go down in history as this great guy, which, I mean, it's all Hollywood manufactured anyway. But basically, he's the happy merchant meat. He's the guy that loves to say, my fellow Slavs, my fellow Jews, my fellow white people, my fellow Black people. Like, he's constantly doing that. And he criticizes everybody from the other side. You know, like he says, oh, I am a feral Jew. Israel, you should be doing this. As a Westerner, America, you should be doing this. As a European, Europe, you should be doing this. As a Slav, Russia shouldn't be doing this because we're all Slavs. Like, he constantly does it and he doesn't stop. He's literally the happy merchant meme, like it personified.
Now, there are some people criticizing us on the regular chat. They're saying JF and Alze are ignoring that the hate stems from the Holodomor, the genocide of Ukrainians under the Soviet Empire. Maybe there is some of it carried up to today historically, but I tend to view this conflict as between the lines of the West and the East, and I tend to view the Holodomor as something that the Soviet Empire under a communist dictatorship has done to Ukraine. So I tend to see these as different. I don't know. What about you?
So as a fellow white person, I'm just kidding. But what I'm saying is, you know what? And you're seeing it with the Holocaust. It's the same exact thing. Most people that were alive at that point are now dead. There's very few people that are still alive that were involved in that. There's very little resentment left that's based in reality. Like, yeah, a lot of people say, oh, like Jewish people keep this alive. Well, sure they do. They still want to get whatever brownie points they can from. But it's the same thing with the Holodomor. I don't think there's enough people that were alive that can delineate between the fact that was Russia doing it to Ukraine as much as they say it was the Soviet system, which sucked, you know? And I don't think the generations that are alive now, that are in power, that are actually like doing the things they're doing now, I don't think they have the Holodomor like fresh in their minds as an excuse. I just don't see it.
Yeah, if they have it, it's through intergenerational transmission, and that can happen, but I think there are other motivators to this war. There is ultimately this clash between the Ukrainians and the Russians, and everything that the Russians... Basically, Ukraine was an attempt for the last decade or two to be a multicultural society of some kind. Not in the sense that we use in Canada, which is import African migrants, but in the sense that they tried to do a kind of society built by the Ukrainian ethnics and the Russian ethnics. And any opportunity that the Russians had to influence this society was taken from them. They have been regarded as spies of the Russian Empire. When they voted for stuff in DPR, LPR, Crimea, they've been told your vote doesn't matter. You were at gunpoint by Vladimir Putin. So basically, there's no place for Russians to play a role in Ukrainian society. And this is the reason we have a war now.
There's also another example you can take about the Holodomor that you can compare to the actual Holocaust and the way countries behave. When Israel is widely believed to have nuclear weapons and we're told to basically give them up, they said no. They wouldn't join the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. They will stay away from anything that will threaten the idea that they have nuclear weapons. And that's because they have this mindset of it happened before, it could happen again. But the generations that were saying, no, we won't give them up, were directly involved with that. They were people that were alive when that stuff happened. When the Ukraine was asked to give up their 5,000 nuclear weapons that they had from the old Soviet Union, if the Holodomor was still fresh in their minds and they still believed it could happen again, they would have said no. They would have said, under no circumstances are we giving up these weapons. We don't care what security guarantees you give us. And they would say, because the Russians have proven they'll come in and slaughter us, and we're not going to allow it to happen ever again. But they were just like, yeah, no, that's fine. We'll give them up. Just give us some security guarantees and, you know, look out for us and blah, blah, blah. And at the time, that wasn't the like Zelensky global homo faction. That was even the more kind of pro-Russian, pro-Ukraine independence type people. So it's the idea that they were acting on behalf of remembrance of the Holodomor. I just don't see it.
Absolutely. It's also interesting to see how the American Empire, who has been a savage entity militarily and has been seeding human suffering across the world for the last few decades, judges Russia now. Because if anything, this war is more humane than anything I've seen and more respecting almost of the sovereignty of the enemy in a way than anything that America has done in the Middle East in the last few decades. Basically, Putin is being told, you don't have your security interest. You cannot do like we did in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You cannot expect another country outside of Russia to follow your security diktats. But America has never applied it to itself.
No, but that's also why America absolves itself for everything they've done in Vietnam, in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, everywhere that they've done this. Is they make sure that the people slaughtering each other aren't Americans. They make sure that they give the weapons and the guns and the military support and everything to the people that are going to start slaughtering each other. So they can step back and go, well, that wasn't us. We were on one side for sure. And yeah, bad things may have happened, but that wasn't actually us. You know, we're for freedom and democracy. We just want to see women's rights happen. So like they'll be able to step back and preach from a kind of moral perspective just because they are more than happy to let everybody else do their dirty work. Putin isn't doing that. He's sending his own sons in there to actually do the fighting. That's why I've said, like, if there's anyone who could be judged almost purely for this, it's Putin, because he has no reason to do this outside of Russian interest. It hurts him financially. It hurts his oligarchs financially. It hurts his country financially as of now. It creates problems with countries all over the world. I don't really believe he was afraid of American missiles being in Ukraine, because American missiles can reach him from the US with no problem. We have military bases in Poland. We have military bases in Germany, in Turkey. Like, I mean, the idea that we couldn't hit Russia any harder, like from the Ukraine, is silly. But the idea that he's doing this because he has some weird kind of fetish about restoring the Soviet Union, or because he just hates Ukrainians, or because he's a nut job who's losing his mind, like that all has not been proven by any level of fact whatsoever. Whereas everything Zelensky has done has proven the opposite, that he's doing this purely out of self-interest.
Absolutely. And I wanted to talk to you about the interest of Israel in all this, because Israel has been at the forefront of guiding the American Empire in its war effort. They've been very involved talking about Iraq, for example, and even recommending to the American Congress to engage in the war in Iraq. Here they are surprisingly based, almost. Although Zelensky is Jewish, we have heard Israel basically mock him and tell him, hey, how about you accept this peace deal? Basically telling him, you're too aggressive. This is impressive that Israel doesn't seem to be siding straight out within the expansion of the NATO LGBT empire, basically.
Three reasons. One, up until now, Netanyahu just got out of power, and he was in power for a very long time. He did a very, very good job of bringing like a good relation with Putin, whereas Russia and Israel have always been mortal enemies. And now I wouldn't say they're friends, but I wouldn't say they're enemies either. I think they just are happy to work together. Secondly, 25% of Israel's entire population is Russian. So they have an absolute self-interest in not taking sides with Zelensky, because yes, they may have taken, I think, like 10,000 refugees from Ukraine or something like that, but there's not that many Ukrainians in Israel. But as I said, a full 25% of their population is Russian. So, and very proud Russian, like they still speak Russian. When you see their stores, their signs are all in Russian. They're not like, you know, Israeli nationalists. They're kind of like, this is where we live, but Russia's where we die. You know, so you see that. And also you see the fact that for the last, I would say 20 years, Israel has not gotten money they've gotten, but I don't think they care about that per se. I think the money is just what keeps them tied together in some weird military industrial complex way, but they haven't gotten much diplomatic support. They constantly are fighting with each other. Trump was all about Israel, but that's because Trump had to be about anything that gave him clapping. You know, like anything he could say, look, I had an achievement, Trump would do. And since they wouldn't let him do anything domestically, he was more than happy to satisfy his evangelical base by being pro-Israel. And look what he did. All he did was push peace deals. You know, he got like four or five different Arab countries to make deals with Israel.
Yeah.
So I think Israel is basically telling Zelensky, like, if you read between the lines, what they're telling him is, unless you want to be like us and be called like an occupier and a genocidal whatever, and like, you're going to accept the deal because the West isn't going to let you not accept the deal. So you might as well accept it on terms right now that would be pretty favorable, because I would guarantee you tomorrow they won't be as favorable. And they were letting him know, we're not sending you the weapons that you need if you're going to hold a long protracted, you know, kind of guerrilla war with Russia. Like right now, Zelensky was saying, send the Iron Dome, send the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome would be worthless to them. It's only for short range projectiles, which Russia is not using. It won't even take out a medium range missile, but they will absolutely need it if battle lines are drawn and they start firing small projectiles over the border at each other. And Israel's letting them know, like, no, we're not putting our name on your weird quest, you know, to kind of be this new king of Ukraine. Like, and good for them for it. I wouldn't expect it, but good for them for it.
Yes, that was great. But one thing you say, the West wouldn't let them bring this into a protracted conflict. I'm not sure that's true. The West interested in a protracted conflict.
Maybe I misspoke. I apologize. The West would. I'm saying that Russia doesn't want it. Ukraine absolutely doesn't want it. And Israel doesn't want to see it. Because as I said, when it comes to long protracted battles, that's where Israel's real expertise is. And the last thing Israel wants is to start getting calls from Biden. Oh, we need you to send all of this shit to the Ukraine because you're going to take their side now when they have, what, 20 countries on their border or close to their border or staunchly allied with Russia. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you've seen in Israel that they've basically given up on this idea that Assad is not going to be in power anymore. Mm-hmm. Like they've kind of ended this whole idea that there's still going to be a war there. Lebanon literally has no food. So there's not going to be a war between Lebanon and Israel anytime soon. And Egypt and Israel have been getting along just fine lately. So I don't see them wanting to rock the boat and start pissing people off all over the place when they can just try to kind of do their own thing at this point. And I think they're finally seeing like, hey, they're not on the front page of the fucking paper every day now. And they're like, we like this. Like, we'd like this to keep up.
Yeah, it's impressive. We're switching toward local conflicts, basically intra-ethnic conflicts to a certain extent, rather than global war between white countries and Middle East. And there's something that's pleasant, although there may be some suffering point-wise at the moment in Ukraine. I think generally the world seems headed toward a kind of peace and a kind of settling down.
There's that peace and there's settling down, but there's also something, we used to talk about this a long time ago, and some people I argued with, some people I didn't. It just depended on kind of where their nitpicking was. But you're seeing an awakening of racial consciousness or ethnic consciousness throughout the world, even if it's, wow, we're really fucked, as in terms of like the way things are going, you know? And people are seeing that what we all thought was like going to calm down eventually because, hey, things can't keep going like this. The Canadian trucker thing totally blew that out of the water. When they went after those people and started calling them all Nazis and white supremacists and claiming they were running swastikas and shit like that, like, I think a lot of people were like, these are truck drivers. Like, these are not militia members. These are not people that are, you know, wearing Klan hoods and going to cross burnings. These are regular people who just don't want a vaccine shoved in their arms for no reason, you know? And the fact that the entire world seemed to get on board with the idea that this was white supremacy and they should be able to destroy them financially, you know, and throw them in prison and take away their businesses. I think there's a real, like, as I said, even amongst white people who are basically looking at each other like, wow, we're completely fucked. Like, I think there's an idea that ethnicity is very important. And it's something that even if you want to believe in this whole Martin Luther King, you know, like content of their character, not by color of your skin, it's not the way it works. And it's never going to be the way it works. So yes, people can live together if they agree with each other in a kind of cultural way. But the West has no more culture. The idea that the West has, other than feminism and global homo, that's the only culture we have anymore.
Yeah, which is a culture of hatred. It's a culture turned inward toward the destruction of the self, and so there's nothing of it that survives reproduction and intergenerationally.
Yeah, it's just
the LGBT ideals have not been tested long term in any society ever. They exist in our society for the last 5 years, 10 years maybe, but they taken to their extreme, they are a fight against reproduction, and therefore they are a call for replacement of the society. We'll be headed toward the conclusion of the interview soon because I have a solo part of the show that I need to address some questions sent to me. But your conclusion on the future of this conflict. Do you see a protracted conflict? Do you see Vladimir Putin redoubling effort and just cleaning everything and setting clear borders very soon? Do you see the potential use of nuclear weapons or mass destruction or the U.S. getting involved? What are your calls for what's about to happen?
There will be a protracted battle until Americans feel enough pain. If all of a sudden there's food shortages and all of a sudden like people really can't afford their rent and mortgage and jobs are going out the window, you will see an absolute call immediately to knock this shit off and to stop and to just start. Like when they realize that we're actually sending boats of fuel to Europe to keep Europe warm while we're paying this at the gas pump, like people are not going to put up with it. And they're going to say like, listen, you guys make a peace deal. And then our leaders will do that. They'll say, listen, you guys sit down or we'll just take sides. It'll be that simple. You know, like, I know it looks like we're so super anti-Russian right now. We're really kind of not. We're letting them get away with pretty much anything they want. Like, yeah, we talk a lot of shit. But I mean, that was the kind of funny part about Biden is he tried to like out neocon the Republicans. It's like when the Republicans try to out welfare the Democrats, you know, when they're like, oh, if you vote for us, we'll give you $2,000. And they're like, $2,000, child's play. We'll give you $50,000. We don't care. You know, now the left is like, oh, we have to fight Russia. And they're like, fight. We have to nuke them. We need to send in troops. We need to do all this. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We weren't going that far, guys. Come on. So I think that especially if the Republicans dominate Congress, like they probably will in a few months, I think you're going to see a real pressure to knock this shit off before next winter.
And so the U.S. would have an interest in the conclusion of the conflict. They would stop feeding the Ukrainian resistance. And they would encourage them to just accept some peace deal?
Well, the truth is, they just have to come out and tell the truth, and it's all over. They can't supply the Ukrainians with advanced Western equipment because they're not trained with it. They don't know how to use it. They don't have the replacement parts. They don't have the mechanics. the only way we could give them like advanced fighter craft and our advanced drones and things like that is if we send American military into the country to fix them and to rebuild them every time they break.
And then they get bombed.
Yeah, and the minute they have to say, look, we're not doing it. We're not going to send them, and we're out of old Russian garbage to send you from Europe. So that's, I mean, they have their out. Is they can say, we can authorize $100 million tomorrow, $100 billion tomorrow, $200 billion. It would make no difference because we're not putting boots on the ground and we have no way for you to use this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting, very subtle view. And I'm very satisfied. I think people enjoyed your view. And I agree. It's funny how, you know, we disconnect from each other for years. We don't talk. And we basically reach the same conclusions when presented with new facts of the world developing. Personally, I think that it's beautiful what's happening. It will be a force counter to the American Empire as shown, a player of some level of intelligence that can fuck us up eventually, perhaps. I don't think that Russia would win a war against the US, but I think that having their little dirty plays, they can make life hard for us, and that is best for me.
So there's one thing that you left out of that that's even better for us. And most people wouldn't know this anyway. If there is an absolute destruction of the petrodollar, which you're seeing, and the result to hard currency that isn't backed by debt because America can't borrow that much money anymore, you will see the American economy go through the roof. The reason we can't export right now is because of the strength of the dollar. If the dollar loses that comparable strength to other currencies, manufacturing comes back, shipping comes back, jobs come back that were lost to generations. And you'll see that start to happen, and they won't be able to control it because there's no way America can keep living outside their means like this. So it's almost like you're seeing, yes, will China benefit? Sure, they will. Will Russia benefit? Absolutely. But at the same time, America will benefit from this more than anyone. And then you'll start to see them turning on the things like feminism, like environmentalism and all that, because no one's going to want to hear a word about solar panels if everybody's got great jobs and is doing really well again.
Wow. A Make America Great Again, perhaps for 2024, perhaps a re-election of Trump, a remanufacturing. We might go back to the America of 1920.
I want to go on record as saying Trump is possibly the stupidest person on the planet right now. Because what Trump could do, he could solidify himself as being one of the greatest individuals that ever lived on this planet if he got behind DeSantis right now. Mm. If he said, I'm too old, I'm too polarizing, and I don't want to be the lightning rod for the next 4 years that everyone's going to just go against everything I say because I'm an asshole, I'm going to step back. And I'm telling you guys, get behind Ron DeSantis, look at his record in Florida and look what's happening. If he did that, history books would write about how he was the architect of the next Reagan revolution. Instead, he's going to run himself and embarrass himself and probably fuck up the country for 4 more years.
Wow, those are beautiful dreams. I would like to dream that. I still have my little doubts on DeSantis, but he's so definitely in the right direction. There's nothing to say. His attack on Disney is just perfect. His combating of the groomers is beautiful. Alze, it was a great pleasure talking to you again, and we should do it more often.
Anytime you'd like.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Talk soon. Bye.
All right, well, what a great conversation it was. It's always amazing to catch up with good friends. Surprisingly based. I forgot to say it before he left. Surprisingly based, this Alze tonight. Because very often, I remember a conversation where I was standing for basically dishonoring American soldiers. And I was saying, you know what, I will never stand up and applaud an American soldier. Because ultimately, they are working, they are a force that is hostile to me. They are forces of evil, and they have done evil. And I remember how they reacting to this and taking the stand of, hey, my ancestors fought for America, and I believe in the respect of soldiers. So I thought he was siding more with NATO than what we've seen today. What we've seen today is basically he's indistinguishable from me. in terms of his positioning in this war. Very interesting. Cloud Warmer has sent a super chat. He says, JF, after your successful speed up, here's a challenge. Can you say something at +2x so we can slow down to -2x and hear it properly? That is a beautiful challenge, because it was very easy to slow down my voice, but can I speed it up so that you would shift it back to normal JF? Let's try. JF, after your successful speed up, here's a challenge. Can you say something at +2x so we can slow down to -2x and hear it properly? Oh my god, it's hard. JF, after your successful speed up, here's a challenge. Can you say something at +2x so we can slow down to -2x and hear it properly? It's hard. I have to practice it. Jeff, after your successful speed up, here's a challenge. Can you say something at +2x so we can slow down to -2x and hear it properly? It's very hard because you have to do two things. You have to speak very fast, but you also have to hide the pitch, because when you stretch sound waves, the pitch accordingly gets stretched and you sound graver when you slow down. So try it. Maybe one last attempt, because I'm not satisfied of the pitch. I think I'm an octave too low. JF, after your successful speed up, here's a challenge. Can you say something at +2x so we can slow down to -2x and hear it properly? It's very hard to get those H's at the right place. I don't know what it will look like. By the way, yesterday I have watched, finally, after receiving about $1 million in Super Chat, through repeated request, and someone was telling me, JF, you have to watch The Red Turtle. I have watched The Red Turtle. I'm still missing 10 minutes at the end because I fell asleep, but I can see what is going on here. It's a poetic video, and yes, it focuses on a man alone standing with nature, imagining things because he's lost on an island. And spoiler alert, I will reveal what's happening. This guy is just imagining a girl. He's imagining that the big turtle that has destroyed his boat transformed into a red-haired girl. And he falls in love with her and has a baby. He's delusional, probably. It's suggested that he's delusional because a turtle cannot transform like this into a woman. But it's poetic and it's interesting, more interesting than I expected. Mama JF is here. You've been watching The Red Turtle too?
Yeah, the guy is kind of like a furry.
A furry?
You want to fuck turtles.
He wants to fuck turtles. I had not seen it that way. I thought that he wanted to fuck women, but all he had was a turtle. Yeah, I mean, it's for a movie without dialogue, because there's no dialogue, it's impressive how you can follow it and enjoy it. It's not the best movie ever, though. And yes, there's all sorts of symbolism, but you know, the turtle goes to the heaven at some point, lifts into the sky, and oh, it's a dream in his head, but maybe it's true also. It's very out there. Mama JF, did you have anything else to say?
Yes, also, it's JF's birthday.
It's my birthday? I forgot to mention it.
Yes.
It's April 12, and I am 38 years old.
Oh my god.
How is it to be with an old man like me, Mama JF?
No, you're so young.
I'm so young.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, 38 is impressive. It's still young considering everything we've done, all the crazy stuff I've been through. I feel like I'm 80 years old sometime in terms of what I've had the chance to do.
Yes.
All right.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you, Mama Jeff.
I don't have a present for you, Le.
No, because I said no present.
Yes. But I made him a present, but I cannot talk about it.
Oh, you made a present?
Yes.
And so I'll get it, what, later tonight?
No, you know already.
I know already?
Okay, never mind.
Okay. Okay. Oh, well, okay. Well, yes, that is a beautiful present.
Okay.
Okay, now I remember.
Okay.
All right.
Happy birthday. I love you.
Thank you, Mama JF. Much love to you, too. All right, and what else did I want to say? We will have our Patreon hangout, Subscribestar hangout, in 1 hour from now. It will be at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to end the show here. If you'd like to be part of the private conversation, and it gets very intense. I mean, people are bringing points and they argue with each other. It's a magnificent stream of the great supporters of the show. So if you'd like to join us, join the Patreon or the Subscribestar at the $20 level, and we'll be live in about 1 hour. American something, I can't see his full name, American Accent Askint, sends a super chat. He says, all the absolutely worst people in Conservative Inc. support DeSantis running 2024 over Trump, including neocons like Bill Kristol and Ben Shapiro. Be extremely wary because of this fact. Yes, that is why I keep a doubt open. Is DeSantis running a career to charm the true traditional right wing of white people only to betray them? Or, you know, so I'm asking myself these questions about how much hope can I found into this guy. Some of the stuff, he's been very pro-Israel, as people have pointed out. Not very pro-free speech, when you consider that there is, I believe that he was behind some of these anti-BDS effort and basically making the criticism of Israel illegal in the US. So that is not someone who stands out to me as a representative of the pillars of American freedom. So we have to be careful with him. That being said, if he can strike right at the heart of the LGBT propaganda of America, then maybe he's worth it. Maybe it's still better than Trump. All right, I'm going to take a break, and I'll see you all at the private show, Patreon, $20 level, Subscribestar, $20 level. The link will be posted on there. Make sure you join. And bye-bye, and thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you.